This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macra and myself, Tass. We are broadcasting all the way from sunny St Kilda at the Victorian Pride Centre.
What do you mean all the way from?
Yeah, that's true.
Is that like absolutely live?
Yeah, it might be. Ooh, getting a bit touchy this morning. Our very first guest this morning is the editor of The Conversation, Misha Ketchell. Good morning to you, Misha.
Good morning.
Great to have you back on the airwaves.
Lovely to be here.
And great to have you in the studio in person.
Love the Pride Centre. It's great.
It is good, isn't it? It's good. It's beginning to sort of take form, and you can see people are popping in and enjoying the facility for what it is. You know, I spent a couple of minutes on the desk chatting to one of the concierge staff out there, and people were just wandering in and just having a look around.
It's good that they open the big doors, so
the roller doors.
So it's like welcoming. You can come in and you do. At times I'm here, you see people wandering around having a look. I'm actually going to buy a book today from Hares and Hyenas.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I want one of those T-shirts.
I don't know what book it is, but I'm going to buy one.
Okay.
Misha.
Misha, what an amazing 2 weeks we've had in politics.
Oh, astonishing. And, you know, very, very interesting to see a federal government sort of in, you know, the late stages before an election, going through a period of such clear difficulty. And it's very interesting to see how it's going to play out in the next few months, I think.
But it's interesting, they're not behaving like a government. They're behaving like a political party.
They are.
I was watching some of the media grabs yesterday on the ABC News, which is my main news source, commercial news. Well, it's not commercial, but it's my main news source. And it was interesting to watch not only the PM, but also his ministers constantly sort of putting down the ALP and talking up the Liberal Party and the Liberal government. And it was blatantly political.
I think that's right. We're in a pre-election campaign period now, and the government is behaving much more like a campaigning political party than a government. I think that's really true. And you can see that definitely in the attacks on Albanese and Labor as being the Manchurian candidate being supported by China. I mean, that stuff this week, which, you know, came, I think, originally from Peter Dutton, was so clearly against the national interest to make that issue a political issue in that way, when in actual fact on China, there's really, you know, the differences are paper thin between...
There's not a cigarette paper between them.
Exactly. There's no real difference between the coalition and Labor on that issue. And yet to portray in that sort of shrill way Labor as being China supported, it was interesting to see the head of ASIO come out and really criticise the government.
Twice.
And also the former head of ASIO, Dennis Richardson. So we had, you know, Mike Burgess and Dennis Richardson, two really senior responsible people basically saying this is not on, and yet it looks like the coalition's going to double down on this. Interesting piece by Paul Kelly in the Australian newspaper today.
What do you mean double down?
Well, I think they're going to continue to try to paint Labor as both pro-China and weak on national security. The reason is that they know that... if the election is a referendum on the government, they're in trouble. They know that the voters now know Scott Morrison. They don't know Anthony Albanese as well yet. And so there's an attempt to try to project and portray the opposition in a way that will make it a decision between Albanese and Morrison, not a referendum on the government. And they feel that they can do that by throwing a lot of mud, even where... you know, it is clearly untrue and against the national interest.
The convention has been, and, you know, that national security has been bipartisan. should be bipartisan, and the government is discarding that convention. You know, if Richard Marles is the Manchurian candidate, does that make the Prime Minister the Hillsong candidate?
Well, it's interesting that you raise that because, of course, we had, I think, the really interesting 60 Minutes interview with Scott Morrison on Sunday. And
did you watch it?
I did. I watched
Tassin.
We haven't seen us.
So we need you to tell us and the listeners.
Oh, look, there's a lot of issues with it. I think the first, actually, to come to start with, really, is the religion. Because one of the questions, one of the softball questions served up by Karl Stefanovic was, you know, how do you deal with your sort of empathy, or how do you empathise with the Australian people? And Scott Morrison's answer was about sitting down and wearing out the carpet, praying by his bed. And actually, we ran a really interesting piece in the conversation this week from a theologian who was basically saying that obviously praying is an important part of, you know, Christian theology, and that makes sense. But that response involves a certain abdication of personal responsibility. I mean, this man is the Prime Minister. He has a role where he can actually influence policy outcomes. He can change people's lives. And that actual Christian doctrine says that you have an obligation, because God works partly through human beings as well, you have an obligation to make your best efforts. It's not good enough just to say, I'm going to do nothing and sit by the bed praying and hope that things change. Yet it was interesting because that's an appeal which is very much about, don't look at what I've done as Prime Minister, don't look at our government policies, look at me, I'm a good guy because I pray.
Because, you know, he did the week before or a few days before that in Adelaide, he, at a Coptic Christian church, he got up and I wouldn't say he delivered a sermon, but it was pretty close to it, and explaining, you know, the religious discrimination bill and why they dropped it. What disturbed me about that is not what he said, but where he said it, and that the separation of church and state, particularly on an issue that he was talking about, I found it deeply offensive. Deeply offensive. Now, nothing, you know, any Prime Minister, doesn't matter who they are, if they have a strong belief, that's fine. But to actually effectively give a sermon, I thought, hang on, this is crossing the line a little bit.
Yeah, I think this is to some extent unprecedented. We've never had a Prime Minister who has used their religious belief in the way that Scott Morrison is now using it. And that's been a journey too.
I mean, from a pulpit.
Yeah, that's right. And he'd started off, he wasn't like that. Like, he was a little bit guarded about bringing his religion into public life. He used it somewhat, I think, in the last election campaign, but certainly the early phase of the government. But it's sort of become something where it's clearly been owned as a facet of his character that is supposed to appeal to some extent and to certain constituencies. And I think, look, that's really problematic. I think the other thing that was hugely problematic in that 60 Minutes interview was the way that Jenny Morrison was used. I mean, it was extraordinary to have Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia, sitting there next to his wife, Jenny Morrison, who is not elected to any public role, being asked a question about that time when they went to Hawaii when there were bushfires raging in Australia. And she's the one apologising for it. She actually said, you know, I'm more than sorry if we disappointed. I thought I was making the right decision for my kids. Well, it wasn't her decision.
No.
It was his decision as Prime Minister not to be there, right? His decision to go. She was doing this huge mea culpa, and she was very personable, very intelligent. She had a lot of, you know, she obviously is a very sort of quite charismatic and thoughtful person. But the point is, why is she answering for him when she's not elected and he is? And also, why is Channel 9 colluding in that? Like, why are they letting this happen? Because basically, clearly the whole program was an attempt to whitewash his reputation. They know that now the Australian people are quite sceptical of Scott Morrison. There have been a lot of issues. There have been a lot of criticism. And so why, like, I can't think of a time in Australian political history when a national television program has colluded with a political candidate on Naked Spin in that way.
But it's, now, but it's Channel 9. I mean, seriously, Misha, we know where Channel 9's sympathies lie. So I'm not surprised by it. And, of course, Karl Stefanovic, who's called himself Australia's greatest journalist, but let's not have a vote on it. I mean, they knew what they were doing, and it was blatant. Now, are they going to give the same opportunity to the opposition leader? I mean, these sort of puff pieces are quite common, you know, but Channel 9 knew what they were doing. They knew exactly what they were doing. You are on Saturday Magazine, Macca and Tess. We've been referred to as liberal bashers, but actually it should have an R in it, if I can correct the spelling. Are we going to, if they do an interview with Albanese, are we going to be so personally damaging? I can't. I'd love them to do one with Elbo and his new partner. And if it's rubbish television, yeah, we will.
I think they've promised to do that, and that'll come up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And that's part of the, in my view, because I'm quite cynical about this interview, the sort of pretense of political balance. But the issue here is that with Morrison, he had a personal reputation that needed repair.
Mm.
And that interview to me looked like Channel 9 setting out to do the repair job. With Albanese, I think he has a relationship, but he's sort of not... his personal life, his personality is not so much the issue. So even if they do an interview, I'm not quite sure it will be same for same, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It was interesting. We ran a piece by the journalism academic Dennis Muller this week.
Oh, yes.
And he basically said that, you know, he thought the program was such a naked piece of political marketing, it'll raise questions about what demands were made by the Prime Minister and what undertakings were given by Nine about how it would be done. And this is the thing with the Nine interview. It just looks so much like a collusion in terms of spinning a personality to the public. And 60 Minutes, whatever you want to say about it, it's a show that has been criticised over the years. It also is an extraordinary brand in journalism and does some amazing work. I mean, the investigation into far-right extremism in Australia... I think it was last year by Nick McKenzie that 60 Minutes published, was an extraordinary piece of very brave and important journalism. And that program has got a grand tradition. And I think it's sad to see it sinking in the way that it did. And that's actually not to make a partisan political point. I'm not trying to say, one candidate over the other. I'm just saying, journalists, if you're going to have a politician on your program... to actually collude in not asking them any hard questions, to direct all the questions at their partner as a human shield, to allow this sort of spinning of them in a way, this pure marketing, is just terrible journalistically. It's just really
so bad. What does this say about the Australian people?
Are they swayed? Are people who's sitting on the fence when they watch that, do you think they'd be swayed?
Or affirmed in some way. What's the impact? So somebody's done some research into this and can see that it works.
Well, one of the interesting things actually is that I think the lead-in for 60 Minutes last week was Married at First Sight. It had, I think somewhere, I forget the exact numbers, but around about 800,000, 900,000 viewers. It went down to something like 575 when Morrison came on. So people just turned off, right?
Right.
Which is interesting. Like the numbers were not strong for the program. I think this is the sort of thing that you see in the political cycle in a pre-election phase. So basically they, all of the spinners get very excited about these types of things and they put a huge amount of effort into it. Will it move perceptions? Mm. I think the perceptions get set over a long period of time, and I think its capacity to move perceptions of either Scott Morrison or his government is somewhat limited. But I do just wish that journalistically, when we have somebody who is running... to lead the country, gets asked some questions about what they might want to do if they become Prime Minister again.
Oh, come on. It was Carl Stefanovic.
It was astonishing. He was literally sitting there drinking mojitos and just grinning like a cat that he was there. He was just pleased to be there.
So you said earlier on in this conversation that in many ways the coming election, will be a referendum on the government. What does that mean? And have you arrived at that conclusion?
There are a lot of political commentators that say, basically, in most circumstances, the decision really is about whether to throw a government out or not, rather than being a decision about between two equals, which one do we want to choose. There's a lot been written, sort of said about that. That's particularly so with this election because Anthony Albanese has adopted such a deliberate small target strategy. He's been very low profile. After the Bill Shorten experience, Labor has made sure that all its policies very much match the coalition. So there's very little actual substantive policy difference. There is some, but there's not a huge amount. So given that there's not a substantive policy difference, it really is going to have to be a question about, do you want this group of people who are much more high profile, obviously, the Prime Minister is much more high profile than the Leader of the Opposition, do you want these people to continue leading the country? And I think that's why it'll be really a referendum on the government.
Because I think, sorry Tess, I think, you know, the challenge here is, were people persuaded by it? And if so, why? And to come back to your point, governments, you know, when there's an election, you either have the situation where the government loses the election or the opposition wins it. Now, if you go back to 1975, the government, okay, they weren't the government, Fraser was, but the Whitlam government lost the election and the opposition won it. So you had a drop in their vote and a huge increase. So normally it's only usually one of them. I think what we're going to see this time could be a combination of the opposition's vote lifting and the government's vote falling, which doesn't, you know, which people say, well, that's what happens. But governments lose elections. Oppositions don't tend to win them, but there are cases in history where they do that. I think as we actually get into the campaign, there is going to be, I think, a clearer choice for people. The polls indicate, you know, if an election was held now, Labor would win. But, you know, Liberals that I speak to in the federal government have said to me, Macca, we are not necessarily going to lose this election. We think we can win it. And, you know, as you know, you only need to win it by one seat.
I think the difficulty that the coalition faces, you know, this time as opposed to last time was, last time the electorate didn't know Scott Morrison. He was very undefined. And, you know, that Sean Kelly book is terrific on,
isn't it,
the marketing strategies, the way in which he did sort of that daggy dad, cooker of curries sort of thing, you know, shark supporter to fill out a sense of himself in the public imagination. And that was very successful. People definitely voted to an extent last election for Scott Morrison, not just for a coalition government, but they voted for Scott Morrison. The difficulty this time is that his, having been Prime Minister for a long period of time, his reputation has taken a beating. There's been all of these tweets and emails and things about, text messages about him sort of being a liar and his colleagues having a negative opinion of him. Some of that stuff has rubbed off. So they can't just do a rerun of the last campaign. If they try to do that, they're facing an existing perception, and that's the challenge they have, I think.
Just to change the topic slightly, we've had a message here from one of our listeners that raises the issue of women in this vote. Now, quite clearly, and I think it was you who brought it to my attention, what Scott Morrison was doing was marketing himself and talking specifically to men 40, 45 plus. And, you know, one of the proposed budget initiatives is a tax break or a discount on the price of beer, which is specifically talking to that population group. But talk to us about women. What's happening there? I mean, we've had people like Brittany Higgins and Grace Tame come out and be very critical of Scott Morrison. Yes, we're not hearing mainstream women say very much.
Look, I think that's true. And it will be an interesting question to see how that plays out, how much of what's happened and the sense of anger and frustration will be sheeted home to the government and to Scott Morrison. I thought it was very interesting, and again, entirely inappropriate in my view, that Jenny Morrison was asked the question about Grace Tame and used that Channel 9 interview to criticise Grace Tame's behaviour. There was no sort of real follow-up questioning about that. And again, I was like, well, why is that the role of an unelected person to criticise the former Australian of the Year?
Yes.
And there's no ownership of Scott, but by Scott Morrison of that criticism. He's just hiding behind his wife. It's like, if you want to criticise Grace Tame, you're the Prime Minister, do it.
Do it.
And own it and accept the consequences of it. But to allow that sort of really unfair ruse, I mean, not only is it I think, sort of strangely sexist, because ultimately, if he's got an issue with Grace Tame, he should raise it. I mean, I think her approach is fairly straightforward. I just think it's sort of inappropriate and unfair, ultimately. And I think that there is a bit of a sense, I mean, that whole idea with Brittany Higgins where Scott Morrison gave us, you know, answered a question where he basically said he had to talk to Jenny to understand how to respond to that issue. This whole sort of idea of him feminizing himself or appealing to women through the fact that he has a wife, I think it's a strategy. I mean, there's obviously an attempt to try to use that to soften.
Is it working? Is it working?
I don't think so, because I think people are smarter than that now. They know that men who genuinely understand women don't need to say, oh my God, actually, I know women, I've got a wife and daughters. It's the same thing as saying, you know, I'm not a racist, but I have, you know, friends from different cultural backgrounds. It's like, come on, like, that doesn't work anymore.
Some of my best friends are gay.
Exactly, you know. I mean, people can smell that, I think. Mm. And so, look, I think there's definitely a strategy there, but because there is a perception that that Scott Morrison is not friendly to women, whether it's working, I guess the election will tell us.
We saw this week also election funding or the donations coming up again. Zali
Stegall?
Yes.
You know, in that, we got that wrong. And then the Nationals comes up, there's $1 million that they failed to account for. I think back to a few years ago when on this show, but in Bourke Street, when Michael Kroger advocated for, and he said on air, no political donations. It should be public funded. Parties cannot accept political donations. And I think he was right. That a party, because then how do you stop people spending money if they're candidates and they have a lot of money? But do you think the election funding, you know, the Nationals now being found to have forgotten about $1 million they got, is this going to be an issue? Because it's pretty opaque, isn't it?
Look, my personal view is it's a big problem, and you can really see that in Clive Palmer. And the question is, what do we want? Do we want a democracy or an oligopoly? Do we want a system where the political process is run by citizens, in which all citizens have an equal say and an equal vote, or where it's run by those with the biggest war chests, you know, with the most accumulated wealth to spend on a campaign? You know, we don't have a political culture, say, like America, where it's sort of, you know, freedom the whole time and you know, let everybody do what they want. I think Australia is a sort of country that could have a policy where it says we're going to control political advertising or we're going to control political donations to the point where if you donate, donations have to be, you know, no more than, say, I don't know, a modest sum of money, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000. The money has to be declared and, you know, spent in a fair way. And I think That would mean.
But you can donate in contra, though, couldn't you? You could advertise. You could donate advertising space, or you could donate creative, or a whole range of other things.
Again, yeah, that's true, and I think the
or airtime on a television station.
I think that's where one of the great things that Australia's got. Australia's political system, really, we've got two great things: compulsory voting, which means that politicians have to, rather than just get out the base and, you know, campaign for the extremes, they've got to campaign for the whole of the community.
Yep.
And the second thing is the AEC, which is an extraordinarily high-quality independent umpire. Now, I think you want to be very careful with anything you do to complicate the role of the AEC because it's so successful. But I could certainly see a system where you had a control over the expenditure in the campaigns so you didn't get this situation where just clear vested interests were able to buy, you know, an unfair advantage.
Did you know, Misha, that you can, and we're just about to go to a break, you can actually make a donation to independent candidates up to $1,500 and it's tax deductible?
Yeah, there you go.
But not to the major parties. It's not tax deductible.
I didn't know that.
Yes. I didn't know that either.
Perhaps. And you know, I believe election campaigns should be publicly funded. They are partially in terms of you get X dollars per vote. Put the amount up, do what the Americans do, where you can actually elect on your tax return for a portion of your tax to be go to funding elections, or in Germany to be funding the churches.
Now, Misha, we've had a series of comments from listeners this morning, and I'm not going to read them all out, but the general feeling is that the coalition is going to get re-elected. That's what message is saying. We've got one here from John, we've got another one from Daryl with one R, and so forth. What's your reaction to that?
It's
possible. I think it's quite possible. And I think, there's a lot to happen between now and the election. I think a lot of people who predicted a Labor win last time are scarred by that. I think Australia, interestingly, there's been a lot of commentary around Australian political journalists being perhaps among the most poll-driven in the world. And that's a real problem because, everybody got it wrong last time. And I think that there's, amongst a lot of journalists who are trying to think ethically about how we cover elections well and inform people, we're really starting to think about actually talking about the polls less and trying to define the debate in a way that sort of serves voters better. It's actually really interesting. There's an American academic called Jay Rosen. He's a journalism academic who talks a lot about the failures of political reporting. And he talks about this thing that he calls horse race journalism, where basically journalists like to portray themselves as sort of insiders and say, I think so-and-so is going to win and they're up in this electorate and down in that electorate. And you're sort of calling it almost like it's a race, like a competition. And he says that one of the issues is that as long as journalists are doing that, one of the things that they're not doing that they should be doing actually is going out to the citizens of the country and finding out what issues matter to them and what they want their country to be like. Because one of the things that happens in a political process is the issues are defined by the candidates and by vested interests. So, for example, again, going back to that Morrison interview on Channel 9, he defined what he wanted to talk about. You could see what the issues were, and they're about his character and about who he was. Now, one of the problems with that is if you let the politicians do that, you don't get to the important stuff, which is what do people want? So, look, I think there's a lot of things to happen. I think people are scarred by being wrong last time and the polls being wrong. I do not know who's going to win. But I do think that there is a sense of frustration with the government at the moment.
I want to show you something, and I know our listeners can't see this, but if you search Wikipedia Australian polls, you will get a list of every single poll for the last 2 years. And look at the two-party preferred. Every single one of them suggests that Labor's going to win.
Yes.
On two-party preferred. Every single one.
But that's like getting advice advice from a horse trainer.
This is not one poll. This is every single poll in the last 2 years.
That's true. And look, it's a strong trend. There's no doubt about it. But as I said, everyone was wrong last time. I mean, nobody thought the coalition was going to win last time. You remember Scott Morrison said, "I believe in miracles." Mm. And genuinely, I was up in Canberra in Parliament House talking to politicians, and they were all getting ready to go, the coalition politicians.
Yes, they were.
They all thought they were gone.
Somebody said to me that they believed in miracles, which happened to be a Greek Orthodox priest, I told them that I believed in science. And here I am looking at the science. This is, statistically correct surveying, scientifically conducted surveying that gives us a result. Am I not to believe these?
That tells you a result at that moment in time only. Doesn't tell you about the future. Doesn't tell you about what's going to happen in 3 months'
time. It
told
you what happened when those people were asked the question.
Okay, so in the little bit of time that we've got left, what are going to be the top issues that we think are going to be fought out over the next couple of weeks as we lead into the election?
Gosh, that's an interesting question because one of the difficulties of this election campaign so far is that the policy debate has been sort of anemic. I mean, there's actually been very little on the substantive visions for Australia by both sides of politics. Labor, because despite what they say, they've been adopting, I think what everybody can clearly see has been a relatively small target strategy. But the coalition also, it was interesting, again, going back to the 60 Minutes interview, the big sort of pitch for Morrison for re-election had nothing about what he wants to do now.
Yeah.
Like, there was no sense of what this government's next act will be, apart from sort of trying to be somewhat managerial and likeable. So, look, I think that's a really good question. And it's probably a question that may not be answered in the campaign. I think the standard of the political discourse has gotten to the point where the campaign will be all about personality, really, and marketing of those personalities.
One of our listeners says, "Scammer thinks he's got God on his side. Will that help?"
God, that's a very interesting question too. I think, you know, I mean, obviously the religious discrimination bill was just a disaster and was very badly handled. There are definitely...
But let me take you up on that. Was it really a disaster? And who for? I mean, it was a disaster for our community, but do people really care?
I think so. Look, I'm not aware of people who saw that bill who were happy with it because it was so destructive and it caused so much, you know, trauma unnecessarily. And, you know, there might be an element within... you know, within Christianity or within sort of the hard right of the Liberal Party that might want something like that. But I'm not quite sure that in Australia where you've got compulsory voting, where you've got a broad electorate, it's a winning issue at all. I just don't think it is. So I think that exit, you know, I mean, basically what that did was cause a lot of trauma. They got out of it. It might apply to the base, but I don't think it's a winning issue.
Paul asks, why isn't the policy debate really cutting through?
Again, this always comes back to the question of the media, for which, you know, we're all partly responsible as well, which is that where are the forums where it could cut through? I mean, you've got 60 Minutes doing, you know, you've got Scott Morrison playing his...
Ukulele. Willing out Jenny.
And not being asked a proper question. You know, you've got a whole sort of debate which is around like me more than the other people, but neither side of politics actually is interested in it being a policy debate at the moment. They're both terrified of it for different reasons. So I'm not quite sure that the media is geared towards it. I'm not quite sure the politicians are geared towards it. So if we want a policy debate, we've got to try to bring it on. And how do we do that? I mean, that's
hard. Well, that's what, you know, we have a tradition in state and federal elections is we cover a couple of seats and we have the candidates in and we ask them all of them the same questions, which actually are questions about policy. And hopefully we'll be doing that again this year. Well, we will in the federal. We've actually got to set out which seats, because we'll probably do three, perhaps four. But... it is difficult to have those discussions, Misha, that, you know, often we have politicians on this show that just want to, you know, and sometimes you have to pull them up. You know, it's like, well, I've got 186 words I want to say and I'm going to say them. It is difficult, but in the media generally, it's difficult to get that debate going. You know, the Conversation does it. SBS does it. ABC, not as well as it used to. And, of course... the main, you know, the paid media, well.
You know. Look, I think that there's a lot of strength in Jay Rosen's idea about creating a citizen's agenda, which basically is media going to their communities and actually asking them what matters to them and running their political campaigning around that. And I think Joy is in a super strong position with such a strong community to actually, you know, ask the community what the key issues are for them and then really build the coverage around that. You know, I think that to me is the really strong model. And as much as possible, you know, the Conversation works with academics and we work across the broad community. But that's something that I'm really thinking about at the moment, about how we can define the issues. Like for us, it's going to be through going to experts and finding out what the key areas where they feel like we've got knowledge of ways of doing things better that we're not doing them that we could be doing. I think, you know, for example, Joy with the Joy community, you can do a huge amount creating an agenda and then basically sifting the politicians through that rather than letting them frame it. Because if they frame it, it's going to be about, was Grace Tame polite or can I play the ukulele? And that's not going to help any of us. No, so we need to do that.
And, you know, the Pride lobby does, you know, surveys in each election where, you know, they ask candidates questions and then effectively they get a score out of it. That's very valuable work. I was going to say about the mainstream media, the fifth most popular article on the Age website today is how a sausage competition is pushing a country show.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And it's a good article. I'm interested in sausages. But that's the fifth most popular article that's been looked at this morning.
Yes. No comment.
Yes. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9. That was Misha Ketchell from The Conversation, theconversation.edu.au, I think it is. One of the most, popular news sites and information, you know, and journalism sites, millions and millions of unique visitors every month.
And smart conversation, Macca. I just think it's so good to have an outlet like The Conversation.
Yes.
And aren't we privileged to be able to expose our listeners and to somebody like Misha?
It's been quite a few years now.
It has been. Of course, not everybody agrees. We've had a listener this morning, 080, who thinks that we have been peddling a anti-liberal line, which is actually not correct. We have been very open to all political parties. We've in fact been continuously inviting members of the Liberal Party.
Let me just tell you.
And the opposition parties.
Let me just tell you, the state opposition, in the last 2 months, I have sent 9 messages to Matthew Guy, 3 to Dame James Newbury, and a couple to others. And do you know how many responses I've had?
No, how many?
A big, fat 0. So I want them to talk to our community. And I'm sorry, 080, you don't want to listen to the program anymore. Fine. That's your right. It's also the right of those parliamentarians to not come on the show. But you know what? Jenny Morrison talked about courtesy. Those politicians should at least do the courtesy of responding to our requests for them to come on air. If they don't want to come on, that's entirely their right. I respect that. I don't like it, but I respect it. If you want to talk to our community and you want to talk about policy, we're happy to do it. But, you know, don't just ignore us, because what you're saying, whether you ignore me, I've got broad shoulders. I can cope with that, as can Tess. It's our community that wants to hear from you.
You've been listening to Saturday Magazine on Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.